Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
The Bears not only can win this game, but need to win this game to justify all of this offseason hype that we had.
Okay.
If so they don't...
How do they win the game?
They win the game by not trying to get too cute.
Williams pitches into Swift. Swift in trouble. Down he goes. And shuts down an option run.
Absolutely hate the play call. The play call is hard because when you get penetration in an option, it immediately forces the quarterback to be not a part of the play.
If I'm the Colts, what is my goal for this game? My goal is to make Caleb Williams beat me.
All right, Bears football. Play action on first down to Adunze, and it's picked off! Play action. Williams was looking deep, lost the football. Knocked away by Latu, and there's a fight for it. The Colts have it! And that'll do it here in Indy as the Colts pick up their first win of the season, avoiding an 0-3 start.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Happy Bears Monday.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. You are listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. Not a happy Football Monday, Mr. David.
Good morning, Mully. Yes, it's a Monday of reckoning. It is a pretty bleak day, football-wise, in the city of Chicago after the Bears lost a game to the Colts that they should not have lost, that was there for the taking, and an opportunity they squandered. This one's going to leave a mark.
Yeah, it's a bad loss. There's no shadow of a doubt. And I don't know if it's any consolation, but a lot of teams that were 0-2 ended up winning on the day. I mean, it's just that statistic we were told held up, the idea that 70% of the teams that start 0-2 win on week three. Yeah, I mean, you saw that all over the league.
No consolation, you're right.
No consolation.
Absolutely no consolation.
Right.
There's very little that you can say today as we will sift through the rubble, but there will be very little evidence you can present that will make anybody feel any better about that disaster. That was about as bad as it can get for a Bears team that had the kind of expectations they came into this season with, the kind of assumptions that we were all ready to make about this team, this franchise, this organization. And this was the kind of bad loss that will make you wonder about everything you felt good about coming into this year.
Yeah, that's fair. That is a fair assessment of how awful that game felt.
Every level.
Yeah. By the time that game was over, there wasn't a lot of good to
no,
it.
No, every
there
level.
There was some horrible moments.
There was bad, and then there was worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really ugly.
From player evaluation to coaching judgment,
yes,
to player execution, boy, where do you want to start? Because every point that you could jump into this conversation would be the right one, because every decision that was made yesterday seemed to be the wrong one.
And that's why the postgame was as horrible as it was on top of that. Hear Matt Eberflus with the sunshines and balloons in the aftermath.
This is what I mean.
Holy cow.
This is what I mean. When you start to make assumptions about things that are trending in what looks like the right direction, and then you watch what you saw and see what we all could not look away from, and then you hear the head coach of the team, he presided over all this, try to tell you that there's something to be positive that could be taken out of this.
That's not true.
It's insulting.
Yeah, it was a really bad loss. It was a 1-2 start to a season. It sort of underscored this idea that the Bears did not prepare correctly to open the year. I don't know how you get away from that feeling. I don't know how to feel like that wasn't an outright just... You know, here's the thing.
I wish it was just that. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't.
I don't want to limit it. You're right.
I don't want to just say
it's
that.
It's not as simple as that.
To me, it goes beyond just, well, you know, this team didn't handle preseason correctly and they started out slow, because we saw some evidence of that. They overcame that because they did win the opener. But what we saw. Yeah, they did. I mean, their defense and special teams won the opener. I guess we had to give them credit there. It happened. It actually happened.
The only 0-3 team in football lost the opener, as they've lost the rest of their games and their quarterback.
Okay, but what I'm saying is this doesn't scream to me like this is a team that is starting slow because they weren't prepared well. What the problem with yesterday is that it's more than that. It's about what you assumed to be true about year three of a regime, and what you assume to be true about a franchise that maybe had learned the hard way about certain things, doesn't seem to be any different despite all of our hopes that they were. And this is not just an early season problem.
No.
I don't think it gets better because calendar is going to flip to October.
No, the problems, for instance, on the offensive line were there yet again. They were on display. If ever there was a moment in a game, you got the ball at the 2-yard line, you did a direct snap, and you tried to run the ball. You got a yard, so you're on the 1-yard line. You get flummoxed twice. You can't get a yard. And then whatever that was, whatever that trickery that – there were photos all over the internet of the front five. Four of them were just laying on the ground.
Just beaten.
Beaten. Literally on the ground.
You've got an offensive line in a state of disarray and overmatched. Yeah. You've got an offensive coordinator committed to being too cute. You've got a quarterback that looks good but is a little bit too erratic. And you've got a head coach that can't grasp the obvious and can't do the totality of the job. What year is it? What year is it?
Dan Pompey told us.
It's like it's 2022 all over again.
Dan Pompey told us on the pregame that Eberflus spent a lot of time this week in the offensive line room.
Right, I heard that.
He was at their meetings. Mm-hmm. Now think about that. How did that work out?
Well, I imagine. See, I heard that, and I know the symbolism of having a head coach spend time in meeting rooms and stuff, but I don't pin the offensive line problems on Matt Eberflus as much as it's a point of emphasis. It's a roster construction issue. It's an evaluation problem.
And
I think you could put Bill Belichick in that meeting room for 7 hours a day, and I'm not sure it would be much better. They marginally improved pass protection yesterday, but barely. They made a move with the starting lineup, which I guess is good in terms of accountability. Maybe that was injury-related, but there's not very much that happened that makes you feel that much better about the offensive line.
Nothing.
And then it's, you know, personnel, it's scheme, it's a lot of things, but the offensive line was only part of the overall issue yesterday.
It was on both sides of the ball, frankly. Mm-hmm. That the defense that we had not seen have problems had problems. The cornerback, who seemed fairly unbeatable, had problems. You know, you couldn't help but think that there was you could count the positives on like maybe 2-3 fingers of one hand.
They're playing a quarterback that certainly wasn't ready and isn't ready to be an NFL starter.
No.
That was his 20th start yesterday since high school for Anthony Richardson. 20th start since high school.
Probably tell.
And you could tell. And he's feast or famine. He did throw the Bears the football as we thought he would. But he also threw it behind them, as you're alluding to, with the Jalen Johnson, Alec Pierce mix-up. And it wasn't necessarily his mix-up as much as he ran right by him.
Yeah, that's not a mix-up.
That's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Straight line running. Oh, he's open. I can do that. Anthony Richardson beat him. And you know, that didn't lead to a touchdown. The Bears end up getting a turnover there because Richardson flubbed it up.
Well, that was another one. You lost to a quarterback that did that.
That's it.
Threw a pick in the end zone. I don't know how you call that play.
You lost to a quarterback that if you look at the Bears' schedule, as all of us have, I don't know, with due respect to his athleticism and his potential and what he's capable of accomplishing down the road, you lost to a quarterback who right now might be one of the worst you're going to play this year. And look at his passer rating. Look at his numbers from yesterday. He completed 10 passes, and he beat you.
Look at the number of plays you ran. Look at the number of passes that you had. It's extraordinary. Caleb Williams had 52 attempts. The Bears ran, what was it, 84 plays? How in the name of God do you get beaten that way?
52 pass attempts.
52 times? Jeez.
Yes,
he was surprised.
Jeez. 56 called. He was sacked 4 times. Actually, 60 called because he had the scrambles.
Yes.
They called 60 pass plays out of how many snaps that they called?
84, right?
We have found the identity of the Bears offense. It's a drunk college kid. Not knowing whether he's coming or going. What are they doing? They don't know what they're doing. It's one. They get in first and goal on the 4. You want to start there?
That's what I said. You get to the what was the play? Tell me what that play was.
Speed option left
okay,
on 2.
Okay, well,
that's a high school play. That's what it was.
Okay, and that play lost 12 yards. Your running back that you went out and bought, he had a long carry of 4 yards. And he had a 12-yard loss at the goal line?
Well, there's nowhere to go.
What's that play? And then what did the coach say about the play in the aftermath of it? Oh, we like that play.
You like that play?
What?
They broke the huddle too late for it to change play.
Give the man smelling salts before you lead him to the microphone.
The operation was flawed from start to finish.
Wow.
Caleb Williams did not have enough time to call an audible. If he didn't like that play, we heard from Coleman Shelton about what he thought about that play. It's rare to hear an offensive lineman sound this confused or critical of a play called by his offensive coordinator.
Speed option on, obviously wasn't the greatest look to run that.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I was blocking, so I didn't see what happened outside. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to look back at one play and can say that's the play that did it, but honestly, I couldn't tell you what really happened. We'll look at the film and we'll try to grow from it. Obviously, when you hear a play, you focus on what your responsibility is for said play, and you're not thinking of any other thing. You just go out there and try to do your job. So the play didn't work out, and we'll get back to the drawing board, and hopefully we have a better play next time or whatever it is.
The beginning of that is the best part, is that the play didn't work. He basically questioned
a play call.
The play call.
Well,
that's not Olin Krutz, by the way.
Right.
That's not a Pro Bowl caliber center.
But he went to the same school.
Doesn't matter. It's not Olin Krutz. It's not even a it's not even a center that you can guarantee is going to start every game this year.
It's a guy whose job seems on the line always.
Always.
If there was another option.
But he's been here 5 minutes,
yes.
And he's questioning the play caller in game 3. Which, look, I get it.
I totally get it.
Everybody at home is nodding their head in agreement. What were they thinking? What were they doing? The confidence has eroded already in Shane Waldron. So, 3 games in, the Bears are where they have been so many years before. This feels so familiar. For an offseason that was so different, this is so much the same. Same old, same old. Same old Bears.
Yeah, it was a recognizable loss. I'll give you that. But I don't know, David. I mean, it feels like rock bottom, but I'm not even sure that that's the case yet. Because I'm not sure how they're getting out of this one. I mean, we thought, well, all you got to do against this team is line up and run the football. And it might be a good idea to line up under center. They were under center at one point, and they did an end around to DJ Moore. And that's what you're talking about when you're saying you're trying to be clever and you're trying to. So you line up as if, here it is. They're finally going,
How many straight shotgun snaps did they take at one point? I think it was 7 in a row. and it was on a drive. They had long sustained drives.
Yeah.
They would do that. But the people who are looking through this with bear goggles, essentially, the people who were trying to spin this will tell you that the biggest takeaway from this game is that they have a passing offense that is modernized. They have a quarterback that can put the ball where he wants to sometimes when he gets hot, once he overcomes his bad throws, and that this is who the Bears are now. This is not how the Bears won their only game this year, their only game this month. The defense and special teams formula seems to be dead.
They held the ball for 35 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and they managed 16 points. And
two touchdowns.
The Colts had the ball for 24-59 and scored 21 points.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean,
the team that was supposedly soft against the run,
yes,
stopped it and let their opponent average 2.5 yards per carry or something like that. And the yep. team that was supposedly came in feared and intimidating, and the one of the best defenses in football gave up 110 yards to Jonathan Taylor, who's very good. And that offensive line for the yes. Colts did what it needed to do and got the yards they needed to get.
The Bears gave up 150 yards rushing, 4.5 yards per carry. The Bears managed 63 yards on 28 carries. That is 2.3 yards a carry. Led by DeAndre Swift's 13 carries for 20 yards. That's mm-hmm. 1.5.
That's bad for
that's
a team
really bad.
That led the NFL in rushing last year.
Yeah.
A lot of that was a quarterback who's 3-0. We know that. He's Steelers are 3-0. Justin Fields is off to a good start. You can't help but be happy for him. I guess you could. If you were really bitter, you didn't want to be. You want to have. Well, but I think he's
happy about the fourth round pick.
Maybe so.
It seems on the way, right?
Yeah, it
as
seems on the way
to the sixth rounder.
But what Justin Fields is doing in Pittsburgh is that he's thriving in an organization that gets strong and stable and predictable coaching on a week in, week out basis.
Yes,
He's in the right team for the right formula. They are winning with defense. And. And yesterday they got a good play from their running game and from their quarterback, beat the Chargers. They're 3-0. The Bears have their own problems. They have enough problems without having to look east to see how good Justin Fields is playing. The Bears have the Rams coming to town, coming fresh off of a victory over the 49ers. So you may want to look ahead, Bears fans, and say, oh, you got the Rams. You've got the Panthers. You've got the Jaguars. You've got winnable games.
Panthers also won, by the way.
Thank you. Those teams are looking at their schedules and saying, oh, we got the Bears, and smiling because the fear factor is gone. Nobody fears playing that team because you figure out what the Bears did yesterday was remind us all how they typically, chronically, historically find a way to lose.
The crowd was almost in the Bears' favor. I don't know if you predicted that, and certainly the first road game was difficult for them, and you understand that. But that was not a difficult road game.
No,
that was a lot of Bears.
That was not a hostile environment. That was a friendly environment.
Yes, the Bears are like the Caitlin Clark of football teams.
Hello, Caleb. That was the open arms.
Uh-huh.
Talk to some people who were there. Know some good friends who were there. That was a very friendly welcome the Bears received in Indy. Now, the Colts have their followers. They've been there since 1984. Okay, that's a good start if you're talking about history and tradition compared to the Bears. The Bears have a lot of fans in Indiana, in Northwest Indiana, who made the drive down.
Yeah,
I know my people. They were there in support of the Bears.
No doubt about it.
And the Bears did not take advantage.
Nope.
And a lot of people who were there cheering on the Bears left disappointed, left frustrated, left feeling very familiar.
At one point, they showed the sideline, and I thought to myself, God, I hope they don't bring in Joe Flacco. I swear to God, that went through my head.
How good would that Colt team be if Joe Flacco were running the offense?
I think they'd be a hell of a lot better.
I wonder about that, because if they become a factor in that division somehow, maybe their defense gets better. They got some decent pieces. I don't think they're a playoff team.
Got a running back.
The running back is special.
Yeah, he's a good player. He was the best player on the field yesterday.
Their running back reminds me of Saquon Barkley, you know, just because of the way he glides and then bursts, and all of a sudden he's gone.
He was untouched on the touchdown run.
He was the best player on the field.
Yeah.
And you can't have that.
He had a 29-yard touchdown run where they didn't get a hand on him. He did like a jump cut, and then he was gone.
He is the master of the jump cut. He is the king of the jump cut.
Yeah, he's good. They're not good.
I don't think they're good. You lost to a team. Good. Their offensive line's pretty decent. They have some offensive linemen
They definitely do.
Quentin Nelson is a beast.
Best guard in the,
beast.
In the NFL.
Center's not bad. They have some pieces. I'm not crazy about their head coach. But
as opposed to what?
Exactly. He might have won the day.
Yeah.
Really disappointed in Matt Eberflus yesterday.
Oh, disaster.
I think that you just have to be honest about things that happened.
Disaster.
It was not even, and we'll get to this at the pick six about how he handled the post game and all of those things that left impressions.
Not well.
But nothing to me left a more indelible impression than the game mismanagement for the second week in a row. You have to start to wonder about his game day judgment.
They had to call a timeout to run a failed two-point conversion. Okay? They had to waste a timeout.
Well, let me tell you, it could have worked, and it could have looked great and flawless and innovative and all those things.
And you still don't.
And it still would have been a mistake.
I agree.
You still have to anticipate these things better than he's anticipating things. And why is he not anticipating these things? Because he's calling defenses. This is where the multitasking gets in the way. You are so wrapped up. He's an excellent defensive play caller. He has done a phenomenal job in reinvigorating that defense. But when he's got to do everything, when he's thinking about how am I going to stop Anthony Richardson on the next series, all of a sudden he's not thinking about, you know what, if we score here, we're going for two. Let's get ready. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, listen, play some power football. I think we requested that before. The head coach spent time in the offensive line room. You would think that would reflect with some power football. And what did they do? They did not do what you hoped they might do. What anybody who watched the Colts play in the first 2 weeks would tell you need to do.
Well, anybody who has been to a high school football homecoming game could have told you what the Bears needed to do against the Colts and were unable to execute or even try to implement.
They didn't try to implement.
They didn't even try to force the run down the Colts' throats.
Nope.
They weren't executing. They bailed early and often, and they became, you know, a Pac-12 team trying to flail the football all over the field with a quarterback that can do it. Hey, maybe Caleb Williams took a little bit of a step forward. We'll talk about whether that was progress or not. Good signs, bad signs, a mixed bag. But
he held the ball a little bit. He did take a couple sacks that were on him.
No doubt. But you know
what? Throw the ball away.
If you call 60 pass plays, you're going to get some of that. Don't call 60 pass plays.
I mean,
you're not going anywhere fast in that division. Which is, by the way, very good day yesterday for the NFC North.
Well,
taking the North has never seemed more difficult than it does this morning.
Yeah, you're going to need to make a lot of changes.
We're just getting started.
Yeah, we'll get into all the questions. We'll talk about all the stories of the day, of the weekend, and we'll tear this game up and tear into some people, no doubt. It's Mully and Haw. It is Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Visit FeelGreatIllinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. What is your take on the way Matt Eberflus characterized the Bears' ugly 21-16 loss at Indianapolis?
This is our third game, and there was some positivity to take out of this, and we're encouraged. We're encouraged in that locker room. We are encouraged, and we are, we'll have our head moving forward, eyes moving forward, and we're going to get better this week.
Is that your takeaway?
Ah, good God almighty, no. That's not my takeaway at all. Are you encouraged? I'm outcouraged. I don't know what the hell the in and the out was. What is he saying? Encouraged.
You made a new name.
It's
a new
encouraged.
Word.
Read the word.
I'm looking that up. Outcouraged.
No, I'm just saying. He used it.
I know.
So I'm outcouraged.
I love it.
I did not care for his post-game twist, his spin. Here's the thing, man. You can go to the barber. You can get yourself different look. You're going to be the same guy you are. And it just fell flat, sadly. I don't want to pick on him, but that fell really flat. And it felt really like the wrong way of approaching this game. And I don't know anyone. And I talk to a lot of people and I get a lot of texts from people that I know. I don't know anyone that was encouraged or whatever word he butchered there. No, that was exactly the opposite. That was, you're trying to play finesse football when all you got to do is try to punch someone in the face. And it was the greatest example of it was when you ran your jet sweep, what did you call it? The stretch option, whatever, speed option.
Option left on two.
Okay, yeah. Now, you can be encouraged by that, I will be
I'm
out.
I'm telling you, that's the way it sounded in every high school huddle across America.
Count me
on Friday night.
Out!
Yeah, I don't know how. It would be really a deep dive that Brandon and I could potentially do, give us a little homework. But
okay.
Do you guys remember, and you guys see and read all the transcripts of Bears Matt Eberflus press conference. Do you remember saying, hey, God, listen, it's going to take time. It's baby steps, one game at a time. Things aren't always going to go smoothly on offense. I don't remember that. So now all of a sudden, because things are not going the way they had hoped, this is the way he's tap dancing around it. And then, of course, they saw something in the last game that the Colts played where an option play worked. Again, this goes back to the identity. Your identity is see a play that the Colts, your opponent stumbled on and then run it? No. Run your offense. And Mully, you brought it up in the first segment of the show. Too many cutesy plays. Too many cutesy little things. And I am so sick. And I wonder if DJ Moore is sick of it. DJ Moore is so elusive that they throw him the ball 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage with nobody blocking for him, and then he gets nailed.
Yeah.
Like that, I'm done with that play. That play needs to be put in the recycling bin.
Nothing he said at the podium was any stronger or more indelible than what we saw on the field. The biggest statement the Bears made and Matt Eberflus made on Sunday were with his actions, not his words. That said, come on now. I like Flus the person. I have been a supporter of him as a guy. As a football coach, do your job. Your team stunk. Challenge your players. Take responsibility. That was as bad of a loss as you're going to see in the NFL. How bad was the loss? It was a kind of loss that makes you wonder and question everything that you thought and felt good about coming into this year. This was going to be different. This was supposed to be different. You got your franchise quarterback. You got your ready-made defense. You rebuilt your offensive line. And the weapons. This was going to be different. This is more the same. You can't sound the same, Matt Eberflus. You lost more than a game. You might have lost your locker room. You're losing the plot. Don't tell me to take away positives. There was nothing positive about yesterday. If you want to strain and get your high-powered football microscope, you can see maybe growth in Caleb Williams' game. That's it. The rest stunk. You're a playoff-caliber team. That's what we said coming into the season. That's what you made us believe after the first victory. But this is as critical of a time of the season as there is because you have winnable games. This is the easy part of the schedule. You can't just try to make people believe they saw something that doesn't exist. The Bears were not positive yesterday. They found a way to lose again. They're losers. Own it.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
Voice of Brad Big, 7:25 is Big's time. If we are playing the blame game for Sunday's inexplicable loss to the Colts, where did you start and who do you start with? Unlike last season, it's not just one group like the offensive line. So what is the order of responsibility?
We could do this every week. We should get a sponsor. The power rankings of Putrid. Who was worse coming out of Sunday's loss? I'll start this morning, and all fingers should be pointing at the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
That was a short honeymoon.
Yeah.
All right? This isn't Hard Knocks. You cannot script happiness. You cannot script success. I don't know what Shane Waldron was scripting, but it wasn't a winning football game plan. You can't call 60 pass plays against the NFL's worst rushing defense and expect to come out of that victorious. Starts with him. Matt Eberflus is a close second. What are you doing wasting a timeout? You're not ready for the two-point conversion? Come on, that is head coaching 101. What are you doing, Flusy? What are you thinking? You got to anticipate better. And oh, by the way, when you have somebody jump off sides at 4th and 2, I know it goes on the player, but it also reflects the coach. Fair or not. So Flusie's number 2. Offensive line is number 3. All 4 guys on the ground during the speed option left. That didn't work. That's a bad look. That's a terrible look. Then I'll put maybe Caleb Williams 4th. Can't throw those interceptions, young man. You cannot do it. I don't care how many passes you complete. I don't care how pretty it looks and how good you're still going to be. Those are bad interceptions. And then last, the finishing out my power rankings of Putrid, at 5th is Ryan Poles. You put together a roster that looks pretty good on paper, but your offensive line is paper thin. How does that happen? Didn't you block in college? Isn't that what you paid for your scholar, your tuition, room board, and books? Ryan Poles put together a roster that's flawed. Lots of problems with the Bears suddenly.
So Shane Waldron is clearly number 1, but I'm going to move, David, your 5th selection up to number 2 because he definitely had a role in choosing Shane Waldron as the next offensive coordinator to pair up with his prized possession that was the number 1 pick in Caleb Williams. So he decided was to help. I mean, he didn't just, you know, he's not on an island, but at the end of the day, it's his name as the general manager. He picked that guy. And he also, you know, fell in love with a guy from Buffalo that still hasn't really played for the Bears that was, you know, supposedly going to fix this offensive line. He was the guy. He overpaid Nate Davis, who hasn't been worth a darn. So he's close, and he might, you know, he might be first, okay? Because if you really want to say it was his fault that Shane Waldron's even here in the first place.
Listen, this was a real disaster. This was a real train wreck. And I think that you can start with the offensive coordinator. I have no problem if that's the way you want to start it. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. But Peggy Kaczynski had a tweet that I saw, and I don't get to listen to their pregame, so I don't know what they are saying, but apparently the general manager was on the pregame show, and he said this. He had this beauty. He said that the O-line communication technique and fundamentals have led to a rough performance rather than bad talent. So he actually defended the offensive line, saying it wasn't bad talent. They just had some rough start to the season because of miscommunication. So in other words, don't look at the team he put together. The guys he put together are good players.
That's Brian Poles backing over his offensive line.
And you know what? I mean, let's be honest about it.
I did not see that.
That moves him way the hell up in my estimation.
Yes, thank you.
Okay? So I might even move him atop the list after reading that yesterday. That got me fired up. And I just you know, you throw your hands up kind of like, what in the name of God? We don't hear from that guy very much. But if he's talking ever, I'm curious to know what he's thinking. He's apparently noticed that there's some issues on the offensive line. Nothing to do with talent. He's put together one of the most talented groups we've ever seen on an offensive line. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I mean, we'll get to players, but right now it's coaching, followed by the general manager, I guess – maybe throw in some other coaches. We haven't talked about the O-line coach or the running game coordinator, any of that's going on. By the way, Ian Cunningham, are you related? Were you standing next to him? You're up here too.
Nice hat.
I'll put everybody on the list. I'll put them all on the list. Hey, you know, what's going on with the building downtown? Let's get on the list. Everybody, there's a spot for all of you.
Kevin Warren's on the list?
I just put him on there.
I know who you're referring to.
That's the question.
I said, hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy, the guy with the buildings downtown. That's Kevin Warren. I couldn't read. I interpret Mully.
I was getting a little worked up.
That's okay.
Talked all week about the Bears' need to run the football against the Colts team that came into the game allowing 234 yards on average in their first two games. How do you explain the Bears managing just 63 yards on 28 carries, which is a 2.3 average per carry?
Cutesy, neatsy, cutesy, curtsy, cutie. Why don't you power run the damn football?
Speed at him left. Speed
like
at him left.
Like a normal team would do. I thought Roschon Johnson, they got him out of mothballs. He actually did okay for himself. It's a pity that he didn't get the majority of the carries. He finished with 30 yards on 8 carries, which isn't brilliant, but it's 3.8 yards average, and he had a 9-yard carry. So that's power running. I'll take that. I think if you had given him those 13 carries, you would have done pretty well. The 13 that you wasted on DeAndre Swift, you might have been able to get more positive yardage. I would give him the 4 for Herbert. I would have given him a lot more. And, you know, you need somebody that's going to run the damn football, and you need to run it more, and you need to power run it. And, by the way, line up on the line of scrimmage and run forward into the area where their Pro Bowl tackle is missing. Ugh.
Yeah, you nailed it there, Mully. You know, no real commitment to the run. And if you take, you're right about Swift. Now, how about we look at how many plays they threw the ball like a foot and a half, right? So if you take some of those foot and a half passes and put the ball in the hand, you know, Johnson not taking the ball every time at the goal line is an absolute huge error, because he was running hard. Okay, now he's really straight ahead, but he runs really hard. If you're gonna do Wildcat, do the Wildcat with him more often.
No, don't do the Wildcat.
Okay, well,
no,
how about we're gonna run right at you and you're gonna have to stop us. We're as tough as you are and we're gonna win. And run the ball, give him the old Wilson enema.
Can I ask, is Caleb Williams not allowed to run the ball? Is Caleb Williams not allowed to get hit? Because, again, same thing. Why can't Caleb Williams, an athletic guy, right? Like, why can't he go under center and plow forward? How about the going back a ways? The missed field goal by Cairo Santos? Do you know how many yards were available for Caleb Williams to run down the field? And then Matt Eberflus, you know, we're hunting touchdowns. You don't hunt field goals. Okay, but, he threw the ball 40 yards into the end zone. It was an incompletion. He runs 5 yards. Mr. Santos nails that field goal.
Yeah, that was one of the judgments that he probably wants back, and if you're Caleb Williams. But I don't know, and I understand the questions about DeAndre Swift. I think this is not the time after his three games of incremental progress, or how do you know how to measure his yards per carry? They're in feet and inches rather than yards, though. It's not even yards per carry. DeAndre Swift is in danger, and he's threatening to create a new statistical category for running backs. It's feet per carry, because they don't necessarily add up. Yards is too embarrassing. But I don't know if Saquon Barkley or Jonathan Taylor could have found yards behind that offensive line at times. It is that's where it starts. With apologies to Ryan Poles, the offensive line collection is not talented enough to create room for running backs to run through. Those holes aren't that big. I get it. It's not just communication. It's talent. It's execution. It's a lot of things. So maybe Roschon Johnson would have made a bigger difference. Maybe Khalil Herbert would have made a bigger difference. I hope Shaden Waldron never, ever, ever runs the Wildcat again. I don't understand that when you are at first and goal at the four, why you take the ball out of your most talented offensive player, who is your quarterback. I never understand that. But the running game is not even a running game. It's kind of misnamed. It's a slogging game. It's a jogging game. It's not, they're not running anywhere except for in circles.
You have way more questions than answers.
That's the voice of Olin Krutz. You'll hear from him at 7. Did the offensive line play better with just 4 sacks allowed this week after six quarterback hits? Who, if anyone, stood out to you as a better addition on the offensive
line? Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if there's anyone that stood out for being better. When I think of the offensive line yesterday, I think of Braxton Jones getting overrun, being weak against on the bull rush. I think of Cole Kmet not being able to handle. I know he's a tight end, but he was in a pass blocking situation and he failed with Latu going right over him. That was bad technique, as Kmet said, but that was mano a mano and you lost to a rookie. And I don't know why he was in that situation. They kept 7 guys in to block 5 and they couldn't do it still. So I'm straining for examples of seeing offensive linemen that I think that had good moments. Maybe Tevin, I don't know, Tevin Jenkins, didn't he have a holding call late? Matt Pryor started for Nate Davis. I guess that was a good thing because it was owed to accountability, but I didn't even know if Darnell Wright would have to watch the second tape. Did he have a good game? No! I know the numbers might have been better, but I'm not going to give any bouquets to the offensive line. They stunk.
Yeah, the offensive line was not good enough. I think Taylor was an upgrade, at least for a day, over. But he ended up getting in a tackle, right, for a couple of snaps yesterday? Nate Davis?
No, he played guard, and they moved prior to tackle.
They moved prior to tackle. That's what it was. They moved prior over to tack. But, I mean, that was something that was like, okay, wow. You know who's not had a good year? In my, you know, again, just as a wannabe offensive lineman, and Darnell Wright's not been very good. Okay, he's not been good, and he stood out a couple plays that were bad yesterday. So no, it's still bad. But I'm glad they at least made a move. They weren't going to make a move, and the only reason Taylor's playing is good. No, they made a move. Okay, they made a move on Sunday on their offensive line, and it still wasn't enough.
Matt Pryor, by the way, the only one of the 5 that was still running toward the sideline to help DeAndre Swift up as opposed to on his back at the line of scrimmage on that play.
So he stood out.
I would say O-line, it's communication, technique, and fundamentals rather than bad talent. I think you got to keep that in mind whenever you're going to be judging them.
I'm sorry.
I think you're not listening to what the fearless leader is teaching you.
I am so sorry.
Yes. I think there were some technique, fundamental, and communication issues.
I know.
But I don't think it's fair to say it was bad talent.
I'm very unfair.
That's the old Bronx cheer.
It's an interesting question, I think.
Kyle Hendricks pitched for the Cubs over the weekend and then thanked everybody who helped make his difficult season worthwhile for him. Do you think this was the last game at Wrigley? Would you bring him back?
Well, unfortunately, no. I do think it's his last game at Wrigley, and I do think that he's been a great servant to the team, and I got a lot of respect for what he's accomplished and the way he's going about it. I just think that you know, they're at a point now where they've got financial decisions. They've got to figure out, they got to get better. And that's a way of saving some money and devoting it to other usage. So I, sadly, I would say no. And I feel bad about it because that's the last man standing. But that's life. That's just how things end up going. And I think that his contract has run out. And no, they're not going to bring him back.
Well, I mean, what are the Cubs going to be next year? What are the hopes of the Cubs next year? There's not a ton of flexibility on the offensive side of things unless you're going to make some crazy trades. You could do a lot worse. I mean, Kyle Hendricks is coming off the books. The contract is done. So it would be a new contract. And I'm sure Kyle would be in for a very friendly contract back. He sounds like a guy who still wants to pitch. Just a question of, does anybody else want him to pitch? You know, he does eat innings. He did show a little bit in the bullpen. I wouldn't be opposed to it, but I got to know the price point. I got to know what the Cubs actually want to accomplish next year.
You don't want him eating innings. You thank him for the memories, and there are a few Cubs that have been any easier to like over the last decade than Kyle Hendricks. But I think he knows what everyone knows. It's time to move on. Unfortunately, if the Cubs are serious about every spot in that rotation mattering and every spot in that pitching staff mattering next year as they pursue a return to the playoffs where they have not been legitimately in a 162-game season in far too long. I know 2020 happened. I barely remember it. But they have not been to the playoffs in a very long time. The old-fashioned way, over a 162-game season. You need to revamp your pitching staff. You need to get guys in there who you can trust to eat innings, and they're not going to be inconsistent. Kyle Hendricks, at the stage of his career, is too inconsistent. He had a good last hurrah at the podium. They lost the game, but I think everyone knows what's going on here, and he said his goodbyes in a very classy manner. And the Cubs had a pretty good weekend overall. I mean, for whoever's still paying attention, and I think some people are, their weekend they win the series against the Nationals, who were distracted, by the way. How about the C.J. Abrams? We won't talk about that. Yeah. But how about Mike Rizzo sending the All-Star shortstop to the minors because he was spotted at Bally's Friday morning before the Cubs afternoon game? Good for you, Mike Rizzo.
He was spotted at Bally's at like 5 in the morning, like our time, and they played an afternoon game, right?
Yes, it was like 8, I think.
I mean, what?
8 a.m.
He was spotted at 8 a.m.?
Yes.
Wow.
Good for you, Mike Rizzo. Sending a message to a player that needs to hear it, clearly.
Well, that's awesome, though. How do you, I mean,
I'd stay up all night?
I'm just saying. You're admiring his stamina? Energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, he's young.
Speaking of living the dream.
He's young.
There's a lot of questions in the air.
Yeah, there's Ozzy. Hopefully hear from him this week. And the White Sox are on their way to soon setting a record for the worst MLB team in the history, having tied the mark yesterday out in San Diego. But even if they are 10 and 15 games worse than thought, are the bigger disappointment than the Cubs? Which team had the higher expectation and which one failed their fan base more?
Well, I think it's a fair question. We've talked around it and maybe about it at times throughout this season. And I would, to paraphrase the Sun-Times this morning, this is the ugliest tie for the White Sox because it is historic and it is indelible and it is embarrassing and it is all the things that we could, you know, pick up our thesaurus and find words to describe how shameful it is, how disgraceful it is. There I go. There's more of them.
Yeah, that's good. I like those ones.
So I think because of how that bottoms out historically, as badly as you feel, as I feel, watching the Cubs squander a chance to get to the playoffs, and I think they should be there, and I think they should do all these things, and I'm disappointed they got the highest paid manager and they're out of the playoffs. The Sox made history. The Sox are worse than any other team in Major League history.
Not yet.
They're going to be at, what time is it? Okay.
Yeah.
In 12 hours.
Yeah. Won't be today.
Hours?
They're off. They're off today.
Okay.
They're off today.
Well, then we can let this kind of just sink in.
This is going to linger.
This is going to be the most disappointing season in Chicago baseball this summer. This is the most disappointing season in baseball history. They win by losing.
Yeah, it's the Sox. But at least, I guess, I had said it before when we've talked about this to death, is that they are going to be remembered as the all-time worst team ever. So we had the 83 winning ugly White Sox and the 24 losing uglier White Sox.
Yeah, listen, that is it's a different level of horror, and it really portends poorly for the future. I don't know how you get out of whatever hole they're digging for themselves. I don't know where it will end up, but it is it's the sort of thing that isn't a year or two away from changing. I mean, this is, you know, it's an indelible mark, first of all, and that's just, it's just pathetic. But it's also, it's a signal that even if you got better, what are you losing, 105 again? I mean, let's just say that you poured money into it and tried to get better and did anything.
You improve 15 games and you still lose 105.
There you go.
Wow.
I mean, think about how bad that is.
What do you think about the website, or not the website, the social media, Twitter feed, X feed, not even reporting the score of the game now? After the last loss, it said, check the MLB app.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's...
They've given up too.
That's very responsible. I mean, listen, they have ostracized the fan base. It's not a surprise. I mean, it's... You know, you can't fire the owner. That's the only takeaway. It's a pity, really. Because if you could, I think that Major League Baseball should step in and fire the owner. But you can't. So there you go. We got the extra point next. As long as we're having a doggy downer of a day.
Well, they're going to break the record at home.
Sure.
It should be.
And I hope no one goes.
In front of friends and relatives.
Yeah, I hope no one goes. Have an empty stadium, have a bunch of guys screaming. All right, we got the extra point next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Sunday's loss indeed requires us to take a second look at this Bears season. Who or what are you questioning more today than you did before Sunday's loss? And where are you with Caleb Williams? Did he really make progress against the Colts? Stand still or take a step back?
Let's start with the overall picture. I think that we came into this season and the expectations were enormous. And we talked about when was the last time anyone felt this good about the Bears organization, top to bottom? And whether it was 2019 or 2007, there were points in time that you look back and boy, those were disappointing seasons too. What is it about expectations in Chicago that people, as a fan base, as a media core, whatever it is, don't seem to be able to handle success? We exaggerate things, and almost like before they happen, they're celebrated. 2007 didn't go so well for the Bears. 2019, not very good. And so we got ahead of ourselves. And if the fear is that this has happened again, or it's happening again. And yesterday felt very familiar. It felt awfully familiar. And as Dan Weider said on the post-game podcast, it felt familiarly awful. And that's a problem. So I don't know that anything that we assume to be true about the Bears organization is we're in a position to feel it feels like today you can't believe that that is going to be true. They feel like flawed assumptions. When you're in the opinion business, you're going to be wrong sometimes. And maybe we were wrong about some of the things that we predicted what happened with this team. I still believe in Caleb Williams. That's the one thing I feel strongest about when we're questioning what we still can believe in with this Bears. I have doubts about Matt Eberflus that cropped up yesterday. I have doubts about the roster that Ryan Poles put together. I have doubts about some of the maybe defensive players that we assumed were infallible and unflappable. I don't really have doubts that Caleb Williams is one day going to be a great quarterback. I don't think that I'm going to overreact to some of the things that he's shown in rookie tendencies. The problem is that he's playing like a rookie quarterback. and we thought that he was going to be plug and play and look like an experienced veteran for a playoff caliber team. Turns out the Bears aren't a playoff caliber team, and Caleb Williams is looking like a rookie quarterback. Those two things aren't really compatible right now, but of all the things to question, I don't think that Caleb Williams is at the top of my list, and I still think he can be great.
Well,
Bears not so much.
Yeah, after that game, and we talked about it a little earlier, I'm more disappointed in Ryan Poles than I was the first two games. It just this offensive coordinator is not getting any better. That being said, and this will sound like, well, what do you mean? Now, Caleb Williams did a nice job distributing the ball, and it's awesome to see him building a on-the-field, in-a-game relationship with Roma Dunze. You know, six catches, 112 yards. They connect for the first touchdown for both of them. Cole Kmet catches 10 balls. DJ Moore catches 8 balls. But I want DJ Moore to catch balls further down the field. You get Keenan Allen back, that's only going to make them better. So he did take, I think, a couple steps forward for sure. But he has to be able to run the ball. It's almost like is he worried about running the ball? I understand he's a pass-first quarterback, but I'm telling you that there's a couple plays that you could pick apart. And he said it after the game. There's just a couple little things, and things could have been different. And one of them would have been him running instead of throwing the ball through the back of the end zone when Mr. Santos lined up to miss that 56-yard field goal.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I think that it's still early days. I would not overreact. I know it's getting into the season and you're three games in and it's a really disappointing loss. But let's see if they can rally at home next week. It is not a simple thing to watch the development of a quarterback. And I get it. There are other quarterbacks that have developed faster. I understand Fields threw for 363 yards and it felt like there were some empty calories there, right? I mean, 49 yards were that pass at the end of the half. The ball got bounced back and it was caught by DJ Moore at the goal line. And that's just kind of empty calories. You got nothing out of that at all. But I do understand the frustration of what people are thinking and seeing. But these things do take time. Regardless of what we thought was going to happen, it takes time. I think we're getting to know Shane Waldron. I didn't really care for the stuff he said at the podium last week, and we talked about it a little bit on Friday. It was just kind of, you know, you just didn't feel like he was answering questions or communicating well, and you're worried about that. I think that there are some operational issues that are leaking in because of the fact that that Eberflus is the defensive coordinator, but that's how he kept his job. So I understand why he wants to kind of flex his muscles in that area. It didn't work on Sunday. Maybe less time in the offensive line meetings. I don't know. It just didn't work. I think at the end of the season, if you don't have a winning season, I think his job is on the line. I think he could be in trouble. And that's not taking gratuitous shots. There is plenty of time, but we're seeing some of the problems that were already there and they're kind of reinforced. So you're just going to have more faith in what they're doing and more trust in the people that they've hired to do these jobs. And listen, it's a difficult thing to do when you feel certain things are unraveling in front of you and you feel like, you know, the reality is they could have won that game if they wanted to run a power running game. Simple as that. If they ran a power running game, they'd have won that game. If they played a field position game and relied on their defense and had a power running game, they'd have won. But you wouldn't get two touchdowns from the quarterback. There are some things that happened that signal, you know, I thought Roma Dunze, for instance, had an excellent game. He had six catches and over 100 yards and got his first touchdown. And I guess he's going to be allowed to keep the ball. So congratulations.
Yeah, but while they were debating that, they were should have been preparing for the two-point conversion.
And again, I think there are a lot of issues that are sitting there that are going to have to be dealt with. But you got to watch the season unfold, and you got to see if they're going to improve and how much so, if indeed they
That's
will.
All true. And it's all well and good. The difference this Monday from last Monday is that when you they lost to the Texans, you felt like a lot of it was justifiable because it was a team that was going to be competing for the AFC Championship. Right. When you lose to the Colts, not the case. That's one of the more beatable teams on your schedule. It's
still
part
a,
of the,
still a road game.
It's but it's still
a team.
This is the soft part of your schedule.
Still a desperate team in a desperate situation. Listen.
Lost to a team you should have beaten.
They're not as good as you think, the Bears.
The second half of the season is going to challenge you in ways that the first half won't, and yesterday feels like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean they're going to get into the division schedule and the division looks awful good and they look like the worst team in the division. There's plenty of time. We'll see how that develops. But no doubt, the Flower has won a couple of games without his quarterback. Very impressive. Well, Kevin O'Connell has won three games without having a starting quarterback, or he's developed one, or whatever way you want to look at it. That's a really...
A free agent retread.
That is a pretty impressive way to start the season, and I think you're seeing that Detroit, as the year is going on, is kind of who we thought they were. The Bears have got to figure some things out, and you got to give them time, and you got to show more patience with a young quarterback. No one wants to. That's the process. All right. We got to get to your calls. We'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is our third game, and there was some positivity to take out of this, and we're encouraged. We're encouraged in that locker room. We are encouraged, and we are... we'll have our head moving forward, eyes moving forward, and we're going to get better this week. And to me, there is better production, on the offensive side. There is better production there in terms of who we've got the ball to. And the efficiency just needs to be better in certain areas, on offense, on defense, and in kicking game. And it starts with the football.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is Matt Eberflus in the postgame. You shake your head.
Wrong answer. Wrong tack to take.
Yep.
Wrong
don't
approach.
Argue. It didn't ring hollow. Let's put it that way. You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. We'll start with Vic. Vic is in Justice. Good morning, Vic.
Good morning, gentlemen. All right, where to start? How about a bird in the hand is worth more than a flock in the bush? Okay, Kayla's here now. I really do hope that the young man succeeds. I am a Bears fan. But as far as blame to go around, I would like, put your thick skin on, by the way. I would like to first blame the National Clown Show, Chicago being first and foremost, that is the media that hyped this dude up talking about a generational talent when you had a quarterback here, that you had a full stadium of people that actually buy tickets and support the Bears and buy Bears gear, shouting, "We want Justin." Next, I'd like to blame the GM, Ryan Poles, who didn't have the testicular fortitude to stick with a player that he knew he gave zero help to. You bring in DJ Moore, he has the best year of his career. He wasn't throwing the ball to himself. Cole Kmet benefited from that. Okay? Then you bring in this guy, DeAndre Swift, and you leave 4.5 yards per carry sitting on your bench in the form of Khalil Herbert. Now everybody wants to blame the head coach who came out and said, "Hey, I fought for Justin." Now you want to blame the offensive line when it was just fine when Justin was standing behind it. Okay, you guys need to stop it. You need to stop it.
Thanks, Vic. Appreciate the phone call.
All right, Vic.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's going to be a reaction from a lot of people who were huge Justin Fields supporters, and they can have their day. Justin Fields is off to a terrific start in Pittsburgh. Nobody can begrudge him that. I think that last year the offensive line had issues. Justin Fields made them less obvious because of his ability to run the ball. I acknowledge that we maybe did get carried away, and there's no maybe about it. We did prop up Caleb Williams and use the term generational talent. Nothing I saw yesterday makes me feel like he's not going to be a great quarterback. He's going to take longer maybe than we anticipated, but – the Bears problems don't start with him, even though I understand why people will call in like Vic and say, why did you change quarterbacks in the first place?
Well, I mean, listen, we can go over all that stuff, and the fact of the matter is, it's a simple answer as to why you change quarterbacks, because you felt this guy would give you an opportunity to win a Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't feel like that was going to be the opportunity when Justin Fields was here.
Keep saying
it's
that.
It's as simple as
keep
that.
Keep reminding people of
but
that.
But that's what it is.
That
that's
is what
the
it
reason
is.
That, you know, that, and so and are you wrong to be ambitious?
No.
I don't think so. I think you just got to be patient. And I think that these things take more time than you imagine. And the problem here in Chicago is that we've never seen what quarterback development is and what it looks like. And we've never really watched a guy that was able to get better and better and be a significantly better player moving forward. So you'll get that. You will get that out of this kid. And hopefully everybody will learn to appreciate and enjoy everything that's happening with him. But I would not get too worked up about
it. I'd be very careful in being out on Caleb Williams this morning.
Yeah, I don't think
I would be very careful in bailing on him because on one of a day that deserves scrutiny and criticism, he's threw for 363 yards.
I know a lot of people want to check in. We're going to try to get to all your calls. We've got Olin Krutz next. We're going to talk to Big Z this hour. So stay with us.
Stay with us.
And you will get your opportunity to sell your story, tell your piece. Olin joins us next. Mully and Haw on the score.